Welcome to CYC Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 120. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. This month, the third World Child and Youth Care Conference was held in Ventura, California. One of the things that the World Conference reminds us of is that the situation supports needs and responses regarding children, youth, families, and communities change as we move across the globe. On this podcast, I really strive to bring perspectives from around the world. Over the past couple of years, my goal has been that roughly a third of the conversations are with people outside of the US and Canada. One glaring omission up to this point has been my lack of anybody at the conversation from India. It's a country with more children than anywhere else in the world. According to today's guest, Dr. Kiran Modi, there are 31 million children who are orphaned in India. So to compare that, in Canada, where I live, the entire population of Canada is 36 million. Dr. Modi is the founder and managing trustee of Udayan Care, a New Delhi-based child rights organization which provides homes, schooling, mentorship, employment, and it seems to me so much more, sadly, only to a fraction of the children who could benefit from the program. Thank you very much for joining me today, and welcome Dr. Kiran Modi.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I first came across your work when I read the Global Perspectives on Residential Care, edited by Leon and Tuhanil, and I was quite struck by your chapter, actually. And I was just going over my notes from reading the book, and I was like, oh yes, I remember. I wanted to talk to you. I just never organized it. And so I'm glad we're finally having an opportunity to speak. So when we talk about homelessness and street-involved children or youth, the situation in India, as I sort of indicated from the introduction, it's an order of magnitude different from any North American or European countries. Can you just give us a sense of the size of the population of India and the situation of children and youth who are homeless and street involved?
Yeah, I would love to, because you know the magnitude of sheer numbers. You know, it's a country of 1.34 billion, and the total child population is 170 million. You know, which is about 41% of this total population of 1.34 billion.
Did you say so it was 40%?
41%.
41%, wow, okay.
So there's a huge, huge number of children. Mm. In fact, every child needs care and protection.
Yes.
Some children are lucky, you know, that they are in families, but some children, they are out of home protection. And those are also estimated to be about 4% of their population in India, which is around 31 million. Although this is a UNICEF study, and later on, some more studies have come out. They have estimated less numbers. But still, the issue is, it is in millions. So it is huge, huge population, you know, which is in need of care and protection by the state or civil society.
So 4% of the population in need of care. I mean, that those are astronomically large numbers. I don't know of any other country that has numbers like that. Why is the number so large? Do we have a sense?
There are many reasons. Of course, you know, there are, you know, disasters and man-made disasters and, you know, all kinds of situations. One of them, most important, being poverty. Mm. Poverty, because of poverty, you know, families are also abandoning their children, and they are abandoning in the hope that you know, someone, somewhere, the state or some civil society member will pick up these children and look after them. And, you know, so the children, they lose their families. There are there is militancy and there are man-made disasters, and also there is a lack of proper political will. And if you look at the budgets by the, you know, government of India, it's such a minuscule amount that they, you know, keep aside for child protection. You know, I think it is 0.4% or something of the total budget. Right. So you can imagine, you know, that there is it of least priority. So more and more children are falling into this, you know, trap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the youth, you know, even those children who get some kind of out of home care, and they are living in institutional care, because in India at this moment it is largely institutional care, you know, rather than other forms of alternative care. So the children who come out of these institutions after 18, there isn't, you know, very defined aftercare programs, and that also makes them come back to the streets and they just disappear.
So there's so much you just said there that I want to talk about. This idea of abandoning children, it's something that I struggle with, because what you said was people abandon their children because they want a better life for their children. They don't feel that they can take care of their children. I know, for example, when I've spoken with Suhanil about the situation in Bangladesh, that parents see madrasas as an example, as the best hope for their children. So they bring children to madrasas. So it's not out of a lack of love of their children, or it's out of, in fact, just the opposite, a desire to have what's best for their children. Am I correct, or am I missing something there?
No. I think you are absolutely right. Which parent won't love their children?
Mm-hmm.
And they need to abandon them just because they don't have enough resources, nor, you know, is there any social security system in India.
Right.
Then the population is so big, and the population control measures are not being, you know, popularized in a proper way by the government, and people are not taking to them. So people produce more children, and especially in poor, economically weaker sections. And when you have more children, you can't, you know, feed every mouth. And then, you know, what you do is to just lose your children. You can't bring them to the child protection system, because just because you are poor, the child protection system will not take them. So the best way is to just lose them on railway platforms, on stations, and then children land up with you.
Right.
But and now,
sorry,
and
go
then,
on.
You know, yeah, and then the child protection system takes over. So they do know that their children will be taken care of, but many times they also fall prey to child traffickers.
Right.
You know, because these gullible people don't understand what kind of dangers await, you know. So sometimes, just because they want a better life for their children, they end up doing all such things, which actually whets the appetite of child traffickers.
You've written in the chapter that I referenced earlier that there are multiple crimes. I mean, the statistic that you write are 16 crimes against children under the age of 18 are reported every day. And of course, you know, if India and Delhi is anything like Canada, the vast majority of crimes go unreported. What's the experience like for young people who are street involved, you know, who are not living with family? And I know you work in New Delhi in particular. What's the situation like for them?
So once the child, see, the problem is, even within families, there is so much of child sexual abuse.
Mm.
One study by Government of India, along with another NGO in 2007, I think, they talked about more than 50% child sexual abuse happens in families.
Wow.
You know, so, and you can imagine in institutional care, or when the child is on the streets, abuse is rampant,
mm-hmm.
you know. So actually we are fighting against all odds all the time, you know. So the parents need to be educated, the communities need to be educated, that they need to take care, they need to strengthen themselves so that the children don't fall apart.
So what does institutional care look like in India, and what alternatives are there to governmental institutional care?
Yeah, so actually in India right now, in institutional care, which according to all UN agencies, according to UNCRC, according to just about everyone, you and me, everyone thinks institutional care should be the last resort. The child should be in the family or go into other alternative modes like adoption or foster care or, you know, kinship care, something like that. But the problem is in India, earlier, although all these alternative cares, care models are also part of the juvenile justice system, but they were not hugely developed and they were not much publicized. So all people understood, even people in child protection, all they understand is, you know, the institutional care. And so the institutional care, actually, you know, it is like an orphanage, which has, I mean, where the child has no personality, because the child is living with hundreds of similar children like him or her, and no personality, no sense of belonging, no sense of agency. It is not developed there. Okay, you are here, you're getting food, you're getting, you know, some minuscule education, and you're growing up. And at 18, you please go out. And that's about it all. So that's what the institutional care was earlier. But now with the government also becoming more conscious that other alternative modes should be there within institutional care also, you know, more innovative models could be introduced and created. More and more institutions are coming up with better care, better standards of care. And with the UN models of alternative care, their standards of care, they are being implemented by many, many agencies now. But still, those agencies who fall under juvenile justice system, that means they have got license to run the homes by the government, there the monitoring by the government is making these institutions also become better. But there are still many orphanages who are not yet come under the juvenile system. The Supreme Court of India has also issued many times these kind of, you know, warnings that all orphanages must come under juvenile system or they should be shut down. And there have been shutdowns of many orphanages, but still there are many which are existing without any proper monitoring or regulatory mechanism from the government. So, you know, more and more of them should come under the proper government monitoring system.
And what happens? I know you've written somewhat critically about this idea of deinstitutionalization, which is all the rage in the West, right? We're all about deinstitutionalizing and removing people from care and et cetera, et cetera. And you've been somewhat critical of that in an Indian context. What happens when the institutions are shut down because of the, you know, they're not appropriate? What happens to the young people in those institutions?
Yes, this is what we have seen. You know, I am not critical of deinstitutionalization at all. What I mean is deinstitutionalization has to be a very, very evolved, planned practice, which it is not. Right now, so many institutions have been shut down and their children have been shuffled to those organizations who are licensed by the government. For example, my home in Gurgaon, that has seats for only 24 children, you know, two sets of 12 children. Now, because two other homes were shut down in Gurgaon, suddenly, you know, those children were shunted to us. We are not capable of handling more than 24. I've got only 24 beds. I've got, you know, resources only to handle them, whether it is human resource, whether it is material resource. And then suddenly I'm burdened with so many more. That means, you know, I'm also being reduced to reducing my standards of care for the children. So when I talk about by shutting down the orphanages, I mean that it has to be a very planned process. Similarly, deinstitutionalization does not mean shutting down the orphanages. It means you know, creating systems by which the families are strengthened and they don't have to, you know, they don't have to leave their children. If the children are within the families, then there is no need, you know, for so many orphanages.
Well said, well said. So let's talk a little bit about the program that you run, Udayan. What is different about the program that you run in relationship to traditional institutional care?
Yes, when I started some 22 years back, I studied first the orphanage model. I visited many, many orphanages in and around Delhi. And what I discovered that children in these orphanages, they enter the home as an orphan with no one, you know, behind them. And when they come out, again, they come out as an orphan, still no one to take care of them. And then after 18, where they disappear, there is no tracking. So it was really hurtful. So I thought, how do we create a sense of bonding and belonging? And that is possible if only I have smaller numbers. So I was also studying the Western foster care model, which really appealed to me. But I thought India was not ready, you know, to have a foster care system unless the government will is there. And people need to be prepared and trained into being foster parents. And there is no such system. So how do we do it? So looking at some other models of group homes, we developed our own model. Although there is a bit of a departure from others, what we have done, like if it's a multi-story building, in one of the flats, our children live. It's just 12 children, 10 to 12 children live together like a family. And so other families in the building also start accepting our children as their own. So they get to lead their lives into a family kind of a situation, you know, where the community also owns them. And we've added another extra layer, which is bringing in mentor parents. Now, who are these mentor parents? They are individuals who commit themselves for life. And they become like a parent to these children. So in each home, we've appointed 3 to 5 such mentor parents who give their time, energy, their minds to the needs of the children. So they come and go in the daytime, they meet the children and they go back to their own homes. And to care for the children, we've got 24/7 live-in caregivers who also become like an extension of the family, because they are there and they are the ones who are responsible. So it's not like an 8-hour shift where every time the people are moving and going away. So children also look at them and look at the mentors as their own family, because these are permanent people in their lives.
And you talk about the mentor parents having a lifelong commitment, and you spoke about institutional care happening, you know, at 18, you're gone, you're on your own. What happens at Udayan when the children turn 18?
So we have set up aftercare services for children. So children continue to, the youth now, they continue to be with us in our aftercare facilities. Some of them, they have joined a college or somewhere where they can't commute from these aftercare facilities. Then we put them in college hostels also. So wherever the youth is comfortable, we try to organize that. And the same set of mentor parents who had raised this child from childhood, they continue to be on their lives. And they continue to guide them and motivate them towards greater things in life. They, in fact, counsel them. And counseling happens at various levels, you know, not only for careers, but as well as for marriage. Because, you know, to be a successful married person, you need to have certain skills, mm-hmm. you know, because they have not lived in a family. So they need these skills. So there again, you know, mentor parents come of great use. So getting the child their jobs to, you know, finding, you know, in India, we still have arranged marriage system. Mm-hmm. So not every child is able to find their own views. So many times we have to pitch in and find the right person and introduce them so that they can get into an arrangement and see whether it works out. Mm-hmm. And it's a big thing in India to give your child away in marriage. So people are not very happy to take a child who has no one. into their families. So we are there as solid support system, like their own parents. So our girls are able to get into very nice middle-class families, and they are leading very successful married lives.
Nice. It's such a, you know, as I listen, it's so different from my own cultural context, right? And as I said in the introduction, one of the things that really strikes me when I read about alternative care in other contexts is how different it is. You co-founded and you're an editor of a peer-reviewed journal called Institutional Children Explorations and Institutionalized Children Explorations and Beyond, an international journal of alternative care. And I recently came across the journal, and so I've been looking at it over the past little while. One of the things that strikes me is there really are some fundamental differences, as well as some similarities, right? Children need love, children need family, children need community. Yet there are some differences. You know, I don't know any social worker or social service provider or foster parent in Canada who would arrange a marriage for a young person that they worked with. What are some of the other differences that you've seen as you edit this journal?
Yeah, so actually, you know, this journal is more for South Asian context. And what I have seen, South Asian countries do have a lot more similarities than dissimilarities. And as compared to the West, we have more dissimilarities than similarities. You know, only the human emotion remains the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the cultural context is so different. And so that's why, and I thought, voice from South Asia is not being heard, you know, and it's kind of getting drowned, or nobody's even interested in knowing, even though this is the largest child population in the world. So that's the reason, you know, I thought we must take out a journal which kind of collects best practices in the region and also talks about laws and talks about some research and data, which is also, we don't have too much research orientation in this part of the world. Hardly any research is happening. You know, universities are not interested in this as a cause. They have other issues, environmental issues and other issues, gender issues, and they do a lot more research on those areas rather than on child protection, and even in child protection, going so deeper into alternative care. So I thought alternative care was really taking a backseat. It is not there in the mind of researchers and academicians. It is not in the minds of NGOs. So why not start a journal which is going to get academicians also interested in this subject? And, you know, 4 years we've been able to keep it afloat, actually with no funding at all, just a couple of us who are there for the love of it. And we are placed all over the world, and we come together every week on a Skype call, and the journal is taken out, and we are trying to reach out to more and more research institutions and universities and NGOs and international NGOs so that we could collect more such articles and, you know, put it there so that there is dissemination of information. Because if people know what others are doing, they are also going to relook into their own systems. But cultural practices, they differ, you know. Most of the organizations here are interested in getting their, you know, children getting married. I don't know for what reason, but they do it even below 18. But now the government is also becoming very, very, you know, stringent monitoring is happening, especially in megacities like Delhi, Bombay, you know, where the CWC, Child Welfare Committees, are very active. The District Child Protection Unit is very active. So more and more issues are being taken care of.
And what's been the response from the academic community, the research community, from the journal?
Yeah, so we have started getting response. Initially, it was slow, and it is also difficult to reach out, you know. So we are trying to find our way. We have started getting almost 50 to 100 articles per issue.
Wow.
And
wow.
We have also started developing a rejection rate, which in the beginning there was hardly any rejection. We always used to ask them to make it better, give them ideas, whoever was submitting. And most of the articles now have started coming from different university professors who are social work professors. So that means, you know, they would be encouraging their students to take up research into this area. So which is very, very heartening.
Nice. And what are the what's looking promising in the South Asian context regarding alternative care? What are you seeing that is obviously your own case sounds, your own organization sounds quite successful. Are you seeing other models that are showing promise or effectiveness with children and youth?
Yeah, like SOS model, which is world established, and they are doing some great work.
There What's the are, model called again? Sorry.
SOS.
SOS. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So they are so good, and you know, most of the good practices have emanated from there. And similarly, there are some very good orphanages who are doing great work, you know, and I mean, there are different ways of approaching, but I think, you know, our mentoring system is really very, very different, and so is our group homes, which are there within the community. Like SOS also has a village situation, but I believe now they are also going to the community mode, you know, and government, you know, I'm very happy to say that the government is also becoming very aware of, you know, deinstitutionalization and developing more family strengthening programs like sponsorships and aftercare. So, you know, we have been in consultation with government and other NGOs, and it seems, you know, now everybody is more aware that deinstitutionalization should happen, and you know, more alternative modes of care should be provided to children rather than just shunting them into orphanage system.
Yes, indeed. And as you said, you know, deinstitutionalization with a conscious, well thought out plan and appropriate responses rather than just a blanket shutting down. As we move towards closing this conversation, is there anything else about you know, the Delhi context or the India context that that you want to speak of that I omitted? There's huge amounts I've omitted, of course, but anything in particular that you want to touch on before we end our conversation today?
Actually, you know, I have said enough, but I do feel, you know, with the new insistence on foster care, which the government is taking it up, and some NGOs like us, we've started, you know, thinking in terms of actually bringing in foster care in a better way and developing more stringent practices of monitoring, because I think everything ultimately boils down to monitoring. If the stringent monitoring is there, any program can work. Even in an orphanage, if proper monitoring is there, things can work. And one also needs to sometimes look at availability of resources. You know, the resources are so meager, government funding is so little, civil society is not, you know, prepared to go that extra mile. And actually, you know, institutional care is no longer on donors' list of, you know, donees. Then where do you get money? How do you look after children? So government has to have a greater, you know, budgetary system so that more allocation can be there for very, very defined child protection measures.
Indeed, with 4% of the population being children in need of care, the numbers are obviously there with, you know, 31 million children identified. I want to thank you very much.
You see, most of the time, mm-hmm. even the money which is allocated to different CWCs and district child protection offices for giving out as sponsorships or helping families, they get lapsed because they don't have proper systems of identifying even such families who need. And those families who reach out, they also don't get. So, you know, the government also needs to develop their systems of reaching out. And the NGOs are, you know, participating in this huge, you know, in this system. I mean, I must say that some of the NGOs are doing such good work in India, and they are trying to bring government programs to the people who are not even aware of them.
That's so great to hear that there is change, that there is movement, and that there is, is success. Sometimes
one more thing I would like to say,
please,
here.
Please.
Yeah. So with the CSR opening up, and I think I'm very proud to say that India is the only country in the world where CSR is becoming, you know, kind of a mandatory thing for all
just,
the corporates.
Just for the audience who's not aware, could you just let us know, remind us what CSR is?
Yeah. So under corporate social responsibility, the government of India, they have taken out a provision. Every corporate who is earning a certain amount of, you know, profits, they have to plow back 2% in community work. And they have to put it up in their balance sheet. So it is becoming mandatory. In the beginning, it was more like it's a good practice. But last 2 years, I've seen such a huge amount of corporate social responsibility money being plowed into the sector. So now more and more corporates are coming forward, and many corporates are taking up the cause of children, but children in the communities. So they adopt slums and they adopt the children there, you know, within those slums, the complete families. So hopefully there will be less and less of family, you know, families giving up their children, because now they will be getting extra support.
That's really hopeful to hear that. Yeah, 2% is a significant amount.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. Thank you for doing the programs that you do, the writing that you do, the editing that you do, the constant diligent that work that you are doing, Karen. I really appreciate it, and it was such a pleasure to meet you today over the air, and I look forward to meeting you in person in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to share my experiences there and to learn from the conference. And it has been absolutely a delight to talk to you. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.